Welcome back to Uncle or Ask Uncle Lee Wednesdays. Yes, that thing. Right. So I have recorded this before. I'm doing it again because I forgot to press the start record button. So it's kind of going to be a repeat for me. Not for you though, thank goodness. All right. So as usual, if you have any questions or anything you would like to get an opinion on, anything to do with witchcraft and magic, throw it in the comments to one of the Ask Uncle Lee videos, and I will be sure to add it to the list. So let's start with an intro and then get into the questions. Welcome to my channel. You are entering the world of magic and mysticism with your host, Lee W. Johnson. Keep the lights on and help improve the channel by becoming a supporter for just $2.99 per month. Hit the join button. Alright, so straight into the questions. This one is from, let me just go over here so I can read it properly. Carmenanti 5865. What's the reason to make, live, and work magic? In my case, it seems that it is a very important part of me and can't ignore it. What's your finish line? Up to be one with the one who is in all or down to be the one. Many times, I don't know where I'm going. Is there an ambidextrous path? So, first of all, yes, there is an ambidextrous path. We call it the crooked path because it winds all ways. So, I guess we could call it an ambidextrous path, yes. Some people talk about the middle path, but I do feel that it's still, you know, it's bringing two opposites and recognizing them as being opposites in order to create a third path. So, I think I like the idea of the crooked path because it winds. It goes all over the place, and you discover many, many things. But what's the reason to make, live, and work magic? Yeah, that's going to be very individual, very personal. Some people will do it to gain power. Some people will do it to gain knowledge. You know, and I think it depends. There's lots of aspects to this also. We can view it from the idea of, we can use the term the great work, for instance, where we are becoming more spiritually advanced. But we can also view it from the perspective of our everyday life. You know, how to foresee what is coming our way and how to navigate through that. We have all the tools available to us in order to do this, so we can improve ourselves, better ourselves, and go through life a lot easier than we would have maybe previously done. Because, as I said, we've got all the tools in order to do that. We have magic on our side, and divination and such things. But yeah, that's going to be very, very individual and very, very personal why people are doing that. You did say, in my case, it seems that it is a very important part of me and can't ignore it. I think anybody, not just who has been part of the magical path or the witchcraft paths, but also those seeking it out, it's in your blood and bones. There's no way you can actually remove it. And I think this is a very important aspect, the separation. We cannot separate ourselves from it. It is part of us. It is who we are. And that whole aspect of understanding, becoming aware that we are not separate from anything. We are part of the all, part of the existence of everything and nothing. We never were separate from it. We just become aware of that aspect, aware of who we are, who we are meant to be. And again, that's part of magic and improving ourselves, bettering ourselves. As for the aspects of the finish line, there's no finish line at all. We just keep going on and on and on. It never ever ends. It's just one of those things, you know. So yeah, we just carry on. And up to be one with the one who is in all, or down to be the one, all the same thing. There is no, you know, as I was just saying, becoming aware, or getting the awareness that we are not separate from anything. We are all one aspect, all one thing, all part of the all and nothing. And that really also comes into spatial perceptions in a manner. We do speak about the up and the down, the above and below, the four directions or the eight directions, the upper, middle, and lower, the inside and outside. But all of these things are really just one big bundle, and they're all within us. So whether it is going up to find an entity or going down to find an entity, all the same thing at the end of the day. And if we're going up, we're moving down. If we're going down, we're moving up. So part of the mysteries. So yeah, it's all gonna be aspects of a personal worldview. No finish line. Worldview is constantly changing and adapting and growing and becoming better, just as we are ourselves, becoming better in our daily lives and also within the great work that we do, if we are pursuing the great work. Many people don't pursue the great work at all. Nothing wrong with that. It's all, again, personal. So I think that answers all of those questions. Difficult to answer on a kind of a broad basis, but you know, it's a good go. So let's go on to the next question, which is from Yoli T 1217 24. What is your view on the games people are playing? For example, the elevator game, Three Kings, Closet Game, The Hooded Man, One Man Hide and Seek, Dry Bones, Charlotte's Web, Midnight Game. I'm not familiar with all of these games, but I assume they have aspects of like calling a being an entity, or you know, something along those lines, that originate within horror movies. I'm going to assume you're asking this question from the perspective of, are they real? Do real things happen? When things happen, are they actually real or just in the person's head? This is going to depend on how old the game is and how many people have been playing it. Now, usually when these games originate within horror movies, they then are taken and thousands upon thousands of people start playing them just for the thrill of it. And if it is in context to contacting a particular spirit, and I'm going to use, I think it was Zozo, who was said to be the spirit of the Ouija board, something like that. There is no historical basis for that particular spirit. However, because so many people have been playing these games, or a particular game, over many, many, many years. I mean, I'm not talking hundreds of years, I'm talking like a couple decades maybe. But thousands upon thousands and hundreds of thousands of people have been playing these games, as I said, just for the thrill of it, to see what happens. It's created an energy form, and that energy form, because it's such a large group, will become an egregore. So does Zozo exist? Probably. I haven't, not something I've contacted myself, and not something I really have interest in contacting. But there's no historical basis for this particular spirit. However, it does exist, probably, because it's become an egregore. It's become an entity that a large, large group of people have created, have given energy to, have fed, and continue to feed. If all of a sudden, you know, that sort of game, the thrill of the game, or the expectations kind of fade away and people stop playing it altogether, that spirit's going to die out, it's going to disappear. And it's the same with all of these games. It may not be contacting a particular spirit, it may be something completely different. I think One Man Hide and Seek is very similar to puppet work, and it probably All of these have kind of a historical basis to them. As I said, One Man Hide and Seek is very much based on puppet work itself. But as far as I remember, it involves kind of putting a spirit into the puppet so that it moves around. So you go seek it out. That can definitely happen. And it may be that what's happened is because, we kind of think of it as it's a creation of a new puppet. Therefore, how can it actually work if it needs thousands of people to actually feed this energy into and, a long period of time? You're creating this new puppet, you can't just create a new spirit that thousands of people have suddenly, added energy to. But the game itself is a spirit, is an entity, is an egregore. And people are feeding that energy into the game itself. And therefore, when somebody comes along and creates a puppet and inserts a spirit into it, it's the energy of that particular game, that makes sense. So it's not necessarily an entity that we have a name for. The game itself takes on an energy, takes on it becomes an egregore. That's why people have effects. They see things happening, and then they carry on that, oh, this game's so real. Yes, it's become real because it's been created. It's been given life, literally been given life. But if people stop playing the game, then it's going to disappear. It's going to go away. So yeah, I don't know if that answered the question, but I think that's the best answer I've got for that. So I'm just going to leave that there. All right. Next question is from. Let me just go over here so I can read the username. It's user dash NPHBW5RZ1Z. All right. So now, this question, can Satan has cast someone into hell for sins? I know, when I saw this, I wasn't sure if it was a joke or not, but I realized if people are actually asking this question, then it definitely needs to be addressed because this is a belief that people have or are thinking that is something that could happen. So let's address it. I don't really know myself. I am not a Satanist, but so I'm going to do some speculation and try and answer it from that perspective. But the best thing to do would be to ask a Satanist and ask different Satanists because there are different forms of Satanism. There is your non-theistic Satanism, there is your theistic Satanism, and the non-theistic is usually more atheistic. That's usually in reference to things like Levain Satanism. And in that regard, you'll probably find that a Satanist on that particular path is doesn't believe in anything. There is no heaven, there is no hell, there is no soul. We don't have a soul. There is no spirit. There's nothing. There's nothing beyond the physical, really, but beyond the atoms that create physical things. So it is a very atheistic perspective and point of view. Therefore, hell does not exist. Therefore, no. From that perspective, no. Absolutely not. If we consider this from a theistic Satanist point of view, I can't say all, but I'm going to say the majority of theistic Satanists are or take a Christian worldview, adopt a Christian worldview into their own practice. And not saying they are Christians, they are just adopting a Christian worldview. Because it kind of gets transferred and transplanted from that traumatic experience they had within Christianity or Catholicism, transplanted into something else. But it takes on the same worldview of, opposites. The one is better than the other. Satanists or the satanic god is overrules the Christian god. All such things. It's about the one versus the other. And that's really a Christian worldview. That's where it originates from. So in that case, you'll probably find a lot of Satanists, theistic Satanists, speak about hell. They refer to hell all the time, the infernal spirits, And such things, because hell is a real thing for them, just like heaven is a real thing for Christians. However, to cast someone into hell for their sins is usually done as a punishment. And if you think about this from a theistic satanic point of view, hell is the place that they want to go to. That's the reward, not the punishment. Therefore, casting someone into hell for their sins would be a reward. Totally opposite of what the Christian concept of cast someone to hell for sins would actually be. So I would say no. On general broad basis. And as I say, I am speculating from the knowledge that I particularly have, but it is better to go and actually ask a Satanist themselves. I would be careful though, it is going to be viewed as a silly question. I am always saying there are no silly questions, and the reason I say that is because if people are asking questions like this, it has a basis somewhere. There's a reason why people are asking these questions, and it needs to be addressed. It needs to be looked at and understood properly. But other people are not me, so just bear that in mind when you go and ask a community of Satanists this type of question. All right. Let's get on to the next one. And that is from, let me just go back here so I can read everything properly, from Le Amusia Public. I'm not sure if I said that properly. Hi, Uncle Lee. Thank you for all you do. It's an absolute pleasure. You've mentioned in past videos that having a grounded worldview will aid in determining your spiritual path. What were some questions you asked yourself when establishing your worldview or values? Okay, first of all, a worldview is not something that begins at a later stage. It's something you always have, and it's something that is always developing. So you're going to, you know, when we're born, we don't really have a worldview. We're just fresh in the world. However, we take on our parents' worldview. But not just our parents, we also adopt aspects of our teachers, the people around us, the adults around us. We adopt all parts of their worldviews. And this starts to develop into our own, but it's still not our own. It's still usually other people's. And this is where the main programming starts to happen. And this is when you start to grow up and you become an adult and you start questioning your own worldview and things like that. Why some things are so difficult to deprogram, because those first 6 or 7 years of your life, that's the most influential part of your life. And that's where the worldview kind of gets put upon you. It's not something you decide for yourself. It's something, that's where you start. Then, so that's obviously going to determine or be determined by the culture, the tradition, the path, the country you live in, all of those things, all of those aspects. Your own parents, what path, tradition, etc., religion that they follow themselves. So that's going to become something which is based on your own environment. Different countries have different worldviews because they follow a different overculture. You know, you kind of got overcultures for a country and you got overcultures for the world now, because we are so internationally based with access to internet, and you know, we have instant access to people all over the world. So we have this worldview put upon us. Then what happens is we start developing, as we grow, we start becoming independent, we start questioning things. And in a lot of cultures, in a lot of families, that's seen as being a bad thing, which is unfortunate, because we should be questioning, we should always be questioning. We should question our own beliefs, we should question other people's beliefs, we should question ourselves all of the time. There is no point where our worldview should become static, because the cosmos itself is nothing, is still, nothing is static. The cosmos is in constant flux and motion, and our own worldview should also be in constant flux and motion, constantly being created, developed, grown, supported, everything else. Now, what are some of the questions I ask myself to establish my own worldview? It's more about just questioning the worldview you have, the beliefs and the values that you already have. Really, really question them, and also throw them out there, expose yourself. And this is why adjusting or adapting or changing your worldview can be extremely painful, is because in order to really strengthen a belief, you have to expose it and yourself to the public face. You throw it out there and you allow people to bash it to pieces, which means bashing you to pieces. Allow people to poke as many holes in your belief and your worldview and therefore yourself as they possibly can. Because if they can poke holes in your worldview, or a belief that you have or hold within that worldview, then and you cannot support it, then you need to come back and you need to re-examine. You need to grow, strengthen that particular belief, give it stronger foundations, so that the next time you put it out there and people start poking at it, they can't knock it down. And that may mean taking that belief and completely and utterly scrapping it, throwing it away, because it really just doesn't serve a purpose for you anymore, and going and trying to find something that does. And then again, developing that particular belief within your worldview, throwing it out there, let people smash it to pieces and see if they can. If they can, come back, start re-examining, and just keep doing this over and over and over again with everything that you believe, all of your values, all of your beliefs, everything that you hold within your own personal worldview. As I said, it's an extremely painful process that we go through, and you know, you're not going to obviously be bashing yourself on a constant basis. There's periods where you need to actually just sit down and just examine, and start building again, rebuilding, or strengthening. It may not be that you have to discard something. It just means that you just need to strengthen it. If somebody comes along and starts poking holes in your worldview and you can't support it, then you need to find out why you can't support it. Does it serve you? Does it ring true to you? If it still does, then you need to find out why you can't support it, and you need to strengthen it, strengthen the foundations, so that you build a really, really strong, healthy house that can't be knocked down. And that's really what it's about. But like I said, worldview is going to be constantly changing and constantly adjusting. It's not something that should ever become static. And I think that answers that one anyway. Okay, so that's going to be it for this week. And I'll see you next week for more questions. As I said, if you have any questions or if you need holes poked in your worldview or one of your beliefs, throw it in the comments below in the Ask Uncle Lee videos, and I'll add it to the list and we can see what we can do. Okay. Have a good one. Cheers for now. Bye bye.